How has mainstream media altered the narrative around the election in the Canadian province of Quebec? What are the big issues not being addressed in the current campaign? What are the forces shaping politics in the predominantly French-speaking province? Is a proposal to restrict the adornment of religious garments on the workplace and the public sector ultimately an instrument of social advancement? Or is it an artifact of xenophobia and racism? Is the vote of students from out of province being suppressed? Is this justifiable? What is at stake for the rest of Canada in this election? On this week's Global Research News Hour, we'll hear perspectives from two Quebec residents, Emeritus Professor of Economics and former Parti Québécois politician Rodrigue Tremblay, and writer and community activist Stéphane Christophe. On today's program, the Quebec election, the campaign you didn't see. Bringing you the analysis beyond the headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of April 4th, 2013. I'm your host, Michael Welch. The Global Research News Hour is a special radio collaboration between the Center for Research on Globalization and campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. We seek to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major stories shaping our world today, from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our program is available from the Center's website, globalresearch.ca. Our show is also broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We'll begin our show with news notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. In a web page devoted to myths and facts about this bill, the Department of Justice rejects the myth that Bill C-13 is an omnibus crime bill that deals with more than cyberbullying. However, Dr. Michael Geist, the Canada Research Chair of Internet and E-Commerce Law at the University of Ottawa, has observed that Bill C-13 does indeed retain provisions that permit an increased warrantless access to personal information far beyond what is envisaged by the current criminal code. As another critic, Terry Wilson, has remarked, despite being promoted as legislation to prevent online bullying, the bill actually has very little to do with bullies and has sections ranging from stealing cable, hacking, surveillance, to terrorism. Cyberbullying accounts for 2 out of the 50 pages in the bill. The bill adds wording to the hate propaganda sections of the criminal code that seems, on the face of it, to do no more than to bring these sections into conformity with other parallel texts, with several important documents of international law, and with a sentencing provision later in the criminal code where the same wording already appears. But a second intention is also arguably at work in this part of Bill C-13, for there is good reason to believe that the new wording is intended, while deceptively avoiding any public debate over the matter, to make it possible to prosecute human rights discourse and advocacy relating to the oppressive treatment of Palestinians by the State of Israel as hate speech or incitement of hatred. That's from the article Criminalizing Criticism of Israel in Canada by Michael Kiefer, posted April 2nd. As if all of this isn't bad enough, there's also the highly contentious trade investor dispute settlement provision in TAFTA. Across the world, big business has already used such investor-state dispute settlement provisions in trade and investment agreements to claim massive sums in compensation. Tribunals consisting of ad hoc 3-member panels hired from a small club of private lawyers riddled with conflicts of interest have granted billions of euros to companies courtesy of taxpayers. EU and US companies have used these lawsuits to destroy any competition or threats to their profits by, for example, challenging green energy and medicine policies, anti-smoking legislation, bans on harmful chemicals, environmental restrictions on mining, health insurance policies, and measures to improve the economic situation of minorities. If governments and parliaments fail to act to protect the public's interests, powerful corporations will acquire carte blanche to rein in democracy and curb policies devised for the public good. That's from the article, The U.S.-EU Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement, TAFTA, Devastating Social and Environmental Consequences, by Colin Todd Hunter, posted April 3rd. On Tuesday, the EU's economy boss, Olli Rehn, a Bilderberg attendee and also vice president of the European Commission, said the EU will soon lavish a nearly bankrupt Ukraine with cash as part of the ongoing effort to yank it out of the Russian orbit. The EU, which has imposed austerity on its member states, will fork over 11 billion euros to the junta in Kiev as part of a package cooked up by the International Monetary Fund late this month. The junta, led by former central banker Arseniy Yatsenyuk, voted to impose draconian austerity measures on the Ukrainian people as part of an IMF package designed to facilitate neoliberal looting of the economy and impoverish millions of Ukrainians. Meanwhile, NATO has announced it will advance peace and stability in Ukraine and Eastern Europe by stationing forces in the Baltic states and stepping up military exercises on Russia's border. Rehn also admitted economic sanctions are unlikely to modify Russia's reaction to a hostile, partially fascist regime in Ukraine and provocative moves by NATO to ratchet up tension along its frontier. That is from the article, Brzezinski and the Globalists' Position, The EU Takeover of Ukraine, by Kurt Nimmo, posted April 2nd, originally appearing at InfoWars. The incredible recklessness and outrageous opportunism of the US-NATO-EU axis in destabilizing Ukraine, knowing that the driving forces on the ground were racist, neo-Nazi elements from the right sector and the Svoboda Party, demonstrated once again the lengths that this axis is prepared to go to achieve its geostrategic objective of full-spectrum economic and political global domination. Yet strangely, not only did many radicals in the U.S. and Europe not see the potential threat that this situation represented, but they seemed unable to penetrate the simplistic Cold War propaganda that suddenly reemerged to frame events in Ukraine. Instead of being concerned that, as a direct consequence of the U.S. actions, a government came to power in Europe that for the first time since the 1930s included ultranationalist, racist neo-Nazis in key positions, the left, along with the general population, allowed the corporate media and U.S. propagandists to turn the narrative away from U.S.-EU destabilization of Ukraine to Putin's supposed expansionist aspirations. The ease with which the corporate media was able to flip that script and to make Putin the new face of evil has been truly astonishing. And the fact that that narrative was embraced by most liberals and large sectors of the white left in the U.S. only affirmed that having abandoned class analysis, anti-imperialism, and never really understanding the insidious nature of white supremacist ideology, the U.S. left has no theoretical framework for apprehending the complexities of the current period. That is from the article, Ukraine and 21st Century Neo-Fascism, Left-Wing Support for Imperialism and White Supremacy, by Ajamu Baraka, posted April 2nd, originally appearing at Black Agenda Report. These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar. The Canadian province of Quebec will see voters go to the polls April 7th. The main contenders are a political party, the Parti Québécois, which wishes to see Quebec separate from the rest of Canada to become an independent country, and its main rival, the Liberal Party, which promotes a strong Quebec within the Confederation of Canada. Another element of the campaign so far has been the decision for the PQ to bring in Carl Peledo, a media baron and former president and CEO of the Quebecor media empire. As pointed out by political rival Françoise David, Peledo has pursued anti-labor actions, including 14 lockouts and the use of replacement workers. To get a better understanding of some of the political currents animating the campaign, we'll be joined this hour by two observers with different backgrounds who will comment on the under-expressed elements of this election as they see it. Rodrigue Tremblay is an emeritus professor of economics at the Université de Montréal. He writes an international blog about economics, finance, politics, and geopolitics in many languages. He's the author of The New American Empire and The Code for Global Ethics, 10 Humanist Principles. He was an early proponent of the creation of a North American free trade area. He's also a Quebec nationalist and formerly served from 1976 to 1979 in the province's first Parti Québécois government under then-leader René Lévesque. Professor Tremblay, welcome to the show. For people outside the province of Quebec and probably inside Quebec, the Parti Québécois is principally the party that wants to take the province out of Canada and turn it into an independent country. Yet the prospect of another sovereignty referendum seems to be undermining the party's electability. So I was wondering if, first of all, as we look at the current election, if you could explain a little bit about why there's this party in power that's going into an election, which is principally about Quebec sovereignty, and yet it seems to be losing its appeal as it talks about sovereignty. What is your understanding of that whole apparent contradiction?
Well, first of all, the Parti Québécois government was a minority government elected in the fall of 2012, about 18 months ago. And it decided to go in the election because it was about to lose a confident vote in the National Assembly on its budget. So it decided to, Madame Marois, the premier, decided to call an election. But this is a short political campaign, you know, hardly more than 1 month. It began in early March, and by April 7, this will be election day. So it has many go and back and forth in that election. At the beginning, as you mentioned, the strategy of the Liberal Party of Quebec was to try to make it a referendum on the possible referendum that the PQ will call. This created a lot of polarization at the first 2 weeks of the campaign. Now, Madame Marois said that she won't call a referendum if she's elected. And therefore, other topics have come forward, like the one about corruption. Mind you, there was a Liberal government for 9.5 years under Mr. Charest before 2012, which has been investigated by an inquiry called the Charbonneau Commission about Corruption, and other themes have come up. But if you believe the polls, the polarization is still going on, in the sense the Liberal Party concentrates its English-speaking minority vote and some conservative French-speaking vote. Well, the PQ is a more French-speaking vote. But there are third parties like the CAQ, Coalition pour l'Avenir du Québec, with Mr. François Legault, which may gain some close to 20% of the vote. And there is a socialist party called the Quebec Solidaire, which may get around 10% of the vote. So there are a lot of votes are being split in many directions, especially on the French side. The poll, if you believe the polls, the problem with the polls now, they are mainly made by internet, as you know. That excludes sometimes old age voters who don't have computers. You know that these polls were very wrong in the last Albertan election and the last British Columbia election. But if you believe these polls, the Liberals seems to be ahead, and with 39% of the vote, they could repeat what Mr. Harper did in 2011 and gain either a minority government or a majority government.
Professor Tremblay, I'm curious to know, since you once served in the PQ, have you noticed changes in the direction of that party since it was first formed?
Oh, of course, in 40 years, the different leaders have vision, a different practice. Mr. René Lévesque was more a practical politician, more moderate. Mr. Parizeau was more independent minded politician. Then you have Pierre-Marc Johnson. After that, you have Mr. Boisclair. And Mr. Lucien Bouchard. Mr. Lucien Bouchard was elected after serving in Ottawa, was elected Premier of Quebec in the early 1999-2000, followed by Mr. Bernard Landry. And now Mrs. Marois, Pauline Marois, who is more of a feminist, of course, surrounds herself with female consultant as her own style. The Parti Québécois is in favor of Quebec independence. So is the Socialist Party Quebec Solitaire, according to its platform. And there's a split, a very small party called Option Nationale, which receive only 1%, also more even overtly calling for Quebec independence. So there's a multiple of parties and a multiple of styles, and people have a lot of choice in during that election. But as I repeat, polarization is really the key word in this election.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask your the announcement of the candidacy of Carl Pelliteau of Quebecor? Just how foreign was this candidate to the traditional values of PQ?
Well, this is a billionaire. There are not many billionaires in Quebec.
Yeah.
And surely none in politics. And this was heralded as a very important recruit for the Parti Québécois. Unfortunately for Madame Marois, she dropped the ball, and she played in the hands of the Liberal Party strategy of polarization, because they didn't prepare the this new candidate for the type of questions he will receive, and he, of course, pushed the debate on Quebec independence, which was not supposed to be on the agenda of this election. Corruptions and the Charter of Values were mainly supposed to be the two major topics. And for 2 weeks, Madame Marouette dropped that ball and had very much trouble to get it back. And it's not even sure if she ever got it back, if she were to lose the election. The Parti Québécois has always been a coalition of different tendencies. It is a social democratic party with a left wing, with a right wing, and a center. But the left wing now is, as some of the left wing has left for the Quebec Solitaire, which receives about 10% of the vote, and that party splits the vote, the independentist vote, Because there are about 12 ridings in Quebec where if you add the PQ vote and the Quebec solitaire vote, then they have a majority over the Liberals. So the splitting of the vote of the independentist movement plays a big role in electing a Liberal Party with less than maybe 40% of the vote, because of course splitting the vote means, of course, that you weaken your base.
Now, keeping in mind sort of the audience outside of Quebec, it does seem as if with the PQ, there seems to be what can interpreted as a kind of xenophobia. We see the Charter of Values, which is proposed by the PQ minority government, essentially banning the wearing of religious adornments, garments on the workplace for in the public sector workers. Before that, the time of Parizeau, the last sovereignty referendum, Parizeau's famous remarks about the referendum being lost because of what he called money and the ethnic vote. You know, it's as if there's these two different categories of Quebecer.
Well, first of all, the only crime that Mr. Parizeau did was to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a concentration of the allophone and anglophone vote in Quebec. 85% of them vote for the same party. Even if it is a corrupt party, they will vote for it. And money was the same. There was the Gomery Commission that shows that there was a lot of under-the-table financing of illegal financing of during the 1995 referendum. But as you know, in politics, if you tell the truth, it's very damageable. And therefore, Mr. Parizeau was branded as naive by saying that. Regarding the charter religious freedom, in a sense. It's an extension of a law that already exists in Quebec that civil servants cannot use political advertisements in their clothing. And this is this has been in the books for more than 25 years. Now it is being extended to political politicization in the sense that the charter says that you cannot, as a civil servant, abuse the right of conscience of the users of your services. And therefore, because there's no choice, the government's services are made under a monopoly, and therefore the users of these services have no choice. Therefore, if they meet somebody who tried to push his religion on you, this is an abuse of your right of conscience. And there's been a lot of propaganda against that in English Canada. But in Quebec, we look more towards Europe. What's happening in Europe? What's happening in London? What's happening in Paris? What is happening in Germany? And the three main leaders of Europe, Mrs. Merkel, and that was Mr. Sarkozy a few years ago, and Mr. Solomon in England, have said that multiculturalism in Europe has been a dismal failure. It has created ghettos that is not good for the people who live in the ghettos and not good for the British society, the French society, and for the German society. So what the PQ government wants to avoid is a repetition of what has been a big mistake, which is recognized now in Europe, and avoid that. And in Montreal, there's a huge concentration of not only Islamic people, but very integrist, what they call integrist Islamic, financed sometimes by foreign governments like the government of Saudi Arabia and the government of Qatar. They financed the building of mosque in Montreal. There are now more mosques in Montreal than churches. while they are only 200,000 Islam followers. So this is to prevent a problem rather than cure a problem. But I understand that in English Canada, if you read the Globe and Mail and other newspapers, this is done. It's called Quebec bashing.
Okay. Well, so but there have been the rallies, protests within Quebec, and not just among Islamists, but among the wider population against
that,
these.
61% of French-speaking Quebecers are behind the charter. Although the poll shows also that more than 60% of Quebecers are against holding a referendum. So the strategy of the parties during that election was, on the liberal side, try to put the focus on the no referendum that the majority of Quebecers didn't want. And on the PQ side, should have been on the charter, which is popular by a majority of Quebecers. Mrs. Marois missed the boat on that, and she was outplayed in its her strategy by the Mr. Couillard strategy, who on his own, has a lot of problems and a lot of questions to answer because he was involved with practicing in Saudi Arabia. He has close links to Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is probably one of the worst countries in the world regarding civil rights, especially for women. They are not even allowed to drive a car in Saudi Arabia. And they applied the Sharia also in Saudi Arabia. They cut arms and they do a lot of damage, which is against the Hippocratic oath that any doctor has to wage when he becomes a doctor. So there are a lot of things that people don't know. Even in Quebec, people don't know. Imagine outside of Quebec. Journalism have been very much criticized. Journalists have been criticized during that election for just amplifying the communiques from the political parties rather than doing in-depth analysis of their programs and so on. And if you want to talk about Mr. Couillard, for example, he wrote an article in the Devoir 2 years ago explaining that he was a pre- Revolution Tranquille liberal. In other words, he goes before Jean Lesage, before Paul Gérard Lajoie, before all these leaders, and he goes back to Alexandre Taschereau and Adelard Godbout. This election looks very much to me like the 1966 election in Quebec, the June 5, 1966 election, when the old Quebec defeated the new Quebec. Jean Lesage decided to run a campaign against the Union Nationale, Daniel Johnson, and he focused on his own person, the attention, leaving behind his more popular ministers. And Madame Marois pretty much did the same thing, at least for the first 2 weeks of the campaign. She was alone campaigning. She is not very articulate. In French we say she talks with a wooden tongue. I mean, la langue de bois. She talks like a civil servant, and that doesn't carry very much sympathy on the part of the voters.
Okay.
Mr. François Legault, who is the head of the coalition for Quebec Future, won the second debate, for example, because he was more sincere and more outspoken. And therefore, in 1966, after the Liberal Party of Mr. Jean Lesage had initiated the French Revolution Tranquille, he was defeated in 1966 on a topic similar to the one of today. It was the question of religion in schools at that time. And old Quebec wanted to keep religions in school and voted for the Union Nationale. And Daniel Johnson was elected at the surprise of everybody. And in this election, it's a bit the same thing. Mr. Couillard is against regulation of of religion in politics, and therefore there are some people, very conservative people, rally around him, and he may defy. This is the old question, the old Quebec, and he may defeat the younger and the more progressive.
You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcast out of Winnipeg on campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM and on the Progressive Radio Network at PRN.FM. We are also podcast on the website globalresearch.ca. We're seeing a lot of protests currently, and it seems, from what I'm sensing, it is a kind of a pox on all your houses kind of sentiment. I mean, these protests, like tens of thousands today, against austerity and neoliberalism. Is this not an aspect of the Quebec election that's simply not being addressed, at least not by the main parties?
Well, you remember that in the spring of 2012, there was a big student protest. And that was mainly the reason why Mr. Charest called an election, and he lost the election. So there's, in Montreal especially, protests are really a regular occurrence. So I was away today, so I didn't follow what happened during that protest march. But it's more European in the sense. You hardly see that in the United States, people walking on the streets. But in Europe, you know, it's very, very common that people take to the street to protest one way or the other. We can call it street democracy, provided it doesn't become violent. The right to protest is part of our democratic rights.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do favor Quebec as surviving as an independent country. Is it your view?
Well, it's not part of the election at all. This is. We call that in French détournement de démocratie. It's to turn a general election into a referendum, which is not. Uh-huh. Of course, it's good strategy, but it's dishonest strategy because the purpose of the general election is to elect members of the National Assembly to form a government. And Madame Marois says she won't call for a referendum during a second term. So when people keep bringing that topic, which is not on the agenda, in a short election like that, it's only 32 or 33 days, that makes people up completely. And if one party wins with that type of strategy, that could lead to social unrest in the years to come in Quebec. Because that party will win with a minority of votes, especially with a majority of the English-speaking votes. So that may, I'm not predicting that, but I wouldn't be surprised that will lead to social unrest.
Mm. So regardless of the turnout of the coming election, what are the stakes for Canada, regardless of who wins? I mean, what is the... let me rephrase that. What's at stake for Canada as the province of Quebec, as the people of Quebec make their choice? Is there any?
Well, Canada is being run now by Mr. Stephen Harper. He got 39% of the vote during the last election. And he has been running the government in Ottawa like he had received 100% of the vote. He didn't pay much attention to Quebec at all. For example, the federal bridges around Montreal are falling apart, and he wants to rebuild the Champlain Bridge, but he doesn't want to pay for it. He wants to put the toll on the bridge. That will have the effect of pushing traffic towards the other bridges, which are already overcrowded. So in Quebec, people don't like very much the way the Canadian government is being run today, especially regarding Quebec interests. And we are not sure if Mr. Trudeau, if he were elected as a Liberal leader in Ottawa, will do much. But this is not discussed during that election, hardly discussed. It's mainly a question of the polarization that I mentioned before, the question of corruption, how to get rid of the corruption, and the question of Mr. Couillard, you know, his character. He has many weaknesses as a politician. He's a doctor. For example, one of his main candidates received $1,200,000 from a medical association while voluntarily leaving his lobbyist post for that association. And it's a crazy election because there are so many things. Many students from outside the province wants to vote in Quebec now, even if they are not permanent residents. So there are a lot of things. And I think it's up for grab. I think Jeffrey Simpson wrote in the Globe and Mail that this election may be up for grab and be decided in the next 4 days. There are still 3 more days now. Every day seems to bring up something new. There's a cat coming out of the hat. Even if the poll says that the Liberals are ahead, there's a small chance that it would be the same thing as in Alberta when the Rose Party was ahead. But during the last week, the Conservative retained power, and the same thing in British Columbia. So we have to wait until Monday night to see what's going to happen. But this is an important election because if the Liberal Party wins, it's really the Conservative Party, because the new Liberal Party under Mr. Couillard is more conservative than liberal. And what will happen to the other 3 parties? Mr. Legault may probably retire if he is another millionaire in politics, Mr. Legault. And there will be maybe more polarization in the coming years. Maybe the disappearance of a few split parties. Who knows?
Okay. I guess I just have maybe one more question to put to you, and that has to do with historically the forces that have animated Quebec politics. I mean, you mentioned something. I mean, with this specific election, and maybe the last one, there's the whole issue of corruption. But I mean, I'm thinking in terms of how the Anglophones and the Francophones Francophones have been within Quebec for a long time, a persecuted minority, or so is my understanding. I'm just wondering if you see that and maybe other factors that haven't been mentioned yet as remaining that people need to understand in order to understand the way politics is done in Quebec as distinct from other provinces in the country.
Well, the question of the language is important. It has been raised now in the last week of the election because the PQ government will reinforce Bill 101, because in Montreal now, with the influx of immigrants, the French population is in a slight minority, even in Montreal. So people live in the suburbs, and they don't recognize Montreal. That's the question of immigration also has not been discussed very much. You know, Quebec receives about 200,000 immigrants each 4 years, which is more than the two second largest cities in Quebec, like Sherbrooke and Trois-Rivières. And that policy of the Ottawa government of having something like 1 million immigrants each 4 years, which is the highest number per capita of any country in the world, is creating some integration problem. It is creating integration problem in Montreal, but mind you, there's a lot of integration problem in Toronto. You see all the what's happening in Toronto. As a matter of fact, in the U.S., Toronto has become the laughing stock of the continent. Mm. The mayor is on the all the laughing show here. Therefore, the question of language will flare up in the coming years more than it has done during this election.
Okay. Well, Rodri, Professor Tremblay, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you for sharing those thoughts.
Good luck for your political program and your thinking about all these complex issues.
Okay, well, we're trying to grapple with it for sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with Rodrigue Tremblay, Emeritus Professor of Economics at the Université de Montréal, former PQ member of the National Assembly, and author of The New American Empire and The Code for Global Ethics. We're speaking with musician, writer, and community activist Stefan Christoph. He's been involved with a wide range of social justice actions in and around Quebec. He's also the author of Le Fond de l'Air est Rouge, a profile of the Quebec student strike of 2012. Thank you very much for joining us, Stefan Christoph. For the benefit of those of us outside of Quebec, is it possible for you to just sort of maybe give us a bit of a sketch of the main players in this election?
Sure. I mean, the main players in this election are very large political parties that have really shifted the debate here in Quebec away from important issues. Important issues like austerity. And today in Montreal on the streets, there were tens of thousands of people protesting against austerity measures that have been imposed on Quebec under the PQ government. So austerity meaning cuts to social services, cuts to public institutions, hikes in fees for the daycare program here in Quebec, the indexation of tuition fees for students. This is a very important issue here, austerity. However, I'd say that a large part of the political class within the elections has tried to shift things towards the debate about the Parti Québécois' proposed Charter of Values, which essentially is a racist proposition that has really divided people in Quebec, but also created a social and political context in which racialized groups are stigmatized and marginalized within Quebec society. So the PQ attempted to push this entire election forward within the context of the so-called Charter of Values. And I think that there actually has been quite a significant reaction against the whole framing of that. And the PQ has fallen very, very low in the polls as compared to when the election was called.
So the whole purpose of the Charter, this Charter of Values, was that conceived as an election ploy? Or is this something that's very deeply embedded in the consciousness of the PQ and its supporters?
I think it's very complex, and there's not one answer to your question. But what I do think is that the PQ has cynically used the charter to attempt to gain popularity in the context of the election and attempted to use politics of fear to secure votes mainly within the regions of Quebec, so the non-urban centers, and try to demonize and stigmatize immigrants and the cultural landscape of immigrant communities as a way of trying to shore up support. Fortunately, it hasn't worked as well as I think the PQ had hoped it would, which is a good sign. And I do think that it's quite clear the whole charter was a cynical ploy by PQ politicians to divert the whole discussion of Quebec issues into a racist discussion of Quebec nationalism that is very, very distant from the original ideas from which the Quebec social movements in the 1970s and 60s were articulating back then. Their ideas were radically different in that, I mean, it was more progressive. The PQ has become a neoliberal-oriented economically and socially racist political party. And I think that they're not doing very well in the context of this election because they've embraced those policies.
People who might have remembered the PQ for, you know, that may have had those sort of socialist or social democratic values and might have been disposed to support the PQ. And then there was the introduction of this candidate, Carl Pettigrew, the Quebecois head.
Sure.
How what kind of an impact did that have? Did that shake up the grassroots of the party or the grassroots membership?
Well, I can't speak about, I don't know about the grassroots of the PQ, but when Carl Pettigrew was put forward within the context of the election, that's actually when the PQ popularity started really tanking. Because, Pelladeau is sort of this symbol of neoliberal corporate capitalism in Quebec. A lot of people talked about Pelladeau as one of the leaders in the corporate sector of the anti-union movement. Pelladeau has locked out his workers in the context of numerous strikes, especially around the very long strike at the newspaper Journal de Montréal, and, has embraced a very neoliberal model of labor relations in terms of the Quebecois corporation, which Pelladeau runs. It was a hugely important moment in the Quebec elections when Pelladeau was introduced. And actually, it really, undercut, I think, a certain momentum that the PQ had closer to the beginning of the elections. Pelladeau's inclusion was really something that I think undercut the whole narrative of the elections. And hopefully, people will start discussing more the sort of policies that Pelladeau represents, which are neoliberal austerity policies. And I think the demonstration today really illustrated an interest, willingness, and focus that still exists within, significant portions of Quebec society to try to focus on issues around social justice and changing society towards a more equitable one, rather than focusing on, division tactics of, the charter and politicians sort of defining society behind closed doors, which the PQ has fully embraced in terms of a mode of political operation.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's the PQ, then there's the Liberals, and then there's another party called the CAQ, and then there's Quebec Solidaire. We're seeing the rise of these protests against austerity and neoliberalism. Is there a sense that any of those entities, any of those parties, or even a more marginal party, is advocating those views?
Sure. I mean, there's a relationship for sure between the ideas that were expressed on the street against austerity today and a party like Quebec Solidaire, which right now is polling at the highest it's ever polled. I believe it's at about 12% right now in Quebec.
Could we talk a little bit about some of the things that have been happening during the campaign? One thing that I've been hearing about is students being denied the right to vote. And some people have been raising concerns about that. Are you familiar with that whole situation? Certain students who may be people coming in from outside the province but have been living in Quebec for some time.
That's been an issue, and people have raised a critique, a very important counter to the claims of the Parti Québécois that there was this wave of non-Quebecois who were trying to vote in the elections. It's sort of absurd because, I mean, essentially they're talking about people who live in Montreal for significant periods of time, who are students, who live in the city and have their right to vote like anybody else. So, you know, they're sort of trying to, I think, again, whip up this sort of frenzy of, like, very rudimentary, simplistic Quebec nationalism that, in its essence, is based on sort of this idea of Quebec nationalism as rooted in white Quebecois identity, which today is just a ridiculous proposition. It's a racist proposition, and socially it's ridiculous because that's not Quebec society today. Quebec is a diverse place with people of many backgrounds and faiths from all over the world. Montreal is an interconnected global city. So the PQ is sort of reverting back to this conception of Quebec society and as sort of this closed, homogenous society, which it's not. It's just not. So I think that their whole sort of tactic and discussion around non-Quebecers trying to vote en masse is A, not true, and the election general office, the office of the Quebec government responsible for the elections, has illustrated that this is not true. But aside from that, I think what they're trying to do is, like, utilize divisionary tactics. It's pretty clear.
Hmm. Okay. Is there, as far as you're aware, are there any other sorts of irregularities that have been happening through over the course of the campaign, maybe things that are not being addressed by the major media?
Well, yeah, I think that the major media has been focusing generally on sensational issues. The way they discuss the so-called Charter of Values is simplistic, and I think generally accepts the framework that the Charter of Values proposed by the PQ is a legitimate proposal. And, you know, it exists, that's for sure. However, the entire framework of that whole Charter of Values is illegitimate, in my opinion. It's racist, it's ridiculous, and needs to be denounced. And, you know, I think it's been shown that, especially as the election campaign has developed, that a significant portion of society, for sure, the vast majority of Montreal, you know, absolutely, the vast majority of the city where I live, thinks the charter is ridiculous. But I think that the mainstream media has given too much legitimacy to the framework of this whole charter discussion, when, in fact, the entire premise is based on divisionary politics of racism.
Mm-hmm. Stefan, in the previous election, the incumbent Liberal Party went down. And this was after a year or more of militant student actions, which
yes.
were critical of the Liberal governments of then Premier Jean Charest and their increased their involvement in increasing student tuition and offsetting more and more to the private sector, and then the Plan Nord. I'm wondering where the student movement is at now, because the Bloc Québécois was largely a beneficiary of, the Parti Québécois was largely a beneficiary
sure.
of that, and so now,
yeah.
you know, what's happening? How is that student movement reorienting itself around this?
I understand
this?
Your question.
Okay.
I understand your question, but I think that, tangibly speaking, if we're talking about the student protests and the Parti Québécois, there isn't a very significant relationship in terms of on-the-ground politics. The Parti Québécois played the student movement during the last elections, but, you know, in the protests on the streets, and I was in those demonstrations, it's very clear that there isn't really any deep relationship politically between the student movement and the Parti Québécois. They claim there is, but there isn't. there's a few spokespeople from some of the student unions that became careerist politicians, but the base of the movement of the student protests in 2012 have nothing to do with the Parti Québécois ideologically or organizationally. So today, where are the students? Well, today they were on the streets with their supporters, like myself, and there was at least 10,000 people, probably more. I don't know what people are saying in terms of numbers at this point, but it was a huge demonstration, probably more than 10,000 people, protesting austerity, and they were protesting the PQ. They are protesting the austerity measures that the PQ is trying to implement right now, which I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I mean, what pollsters are projecting a liberal government, is there a sense that it'll be a return to more of the same, or is there any sense that all of these parties are going to have some trepidation about what can be mobilized on the ground?
Sure. Well, I think that it's clear that today people were chanting against both the Parti Libéral du Québec and the PQ. They're against austerity and for a more just society. That's what people were talking about today. And they are both opposed to both political parties, and they're a grassroots movement that is trying to change society towards being a more egalitarian, environmentally conscious, and anti-racist also society. And politicians are going in the opposite direction, whether it's the PQ or the PLQ, the Liberal Party of Quebec.
Okay. So as Election Day looms, is there anything you can disclose about where these student and anti-austerity and anti-neoliberal movements are going to be gearing themselves towards? Anything specific or just...
Well, I think the protest... Yeah, sure. Thanks, Michael. I think the protests will continue. Demonstrations are planned throughout April. There's going to be another demonstration on April 17th. In Montreal, and there's a whole series of demonstrations that people are planning, and they're demonstrations for social justice and against neoliberal austerity measures, and that will continue. It doesn't matter who's in office. Mm-hmm. People will continue protesting.
And if listeners inside or outside of Quebec wanted to participate or assist in some way, is there a site that they could visit or Facebook page or anything?
Yeah, there's a good website called againstausterity.ca.
Okay. Well, Stéphane, Christophe, my friend, thank you very much for sharing that information with us, and we'll do what we can to relay this to those of people who are wanting to know more about what's going on in La Belle Province. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's always good talking to you.
Okay. We've been speaking with Stéphane Christophe, community activist, musician, and writer, and author of Le Fond de l'Air est Rouge, Profile of the Quebec Student Strike of 2012. You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour. You can hear our programs every week on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and on partnering radio stations across the country. We are broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. You can also download each episode from the website globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I am series host and producer Michael Welch. Join us again next week.